This is an ABC podcast.
This is Baby Talk Podcast with Penny Johnston.
Can you imagine having really bad food poisoning? The type that means you can't even move without wanting to throw up. The nausea that can be set off by just somebody walking into your room. Obviously, you won't be going to work and looking after the family's out, but I want you to imagine that this is going to go on for the next 9 months or until your baby is born. This is the extreme version of morning sickness known as hyperemesis gravidarum. And the next three women you're about to meet have experienced it in extreme. They're members of a Facebook support group of some 3,000 women around Australia who they credit with saving their lives. And if you've never had to deal with this illness, you may find it hard to imagine how debilitating it can be. But in the days before modern anti-nausea drugs and rehydration, this was a cause of maternal death. So today I'd like to introduce you to Kimberly Clayton, Elise Gedigich, and Kiara McNabb. Now, Kimberly, maybe just to start off this story, can you tell us about how you were diagnosed with hyperemesis gravidarum, or as you guys call it, HG?
When I was first diagnosed with HG, it was when I was around 6 weeks pregnant, and I'd never heard of HG before. I didn't know anybody else who had it. So when my husband went to school, he's a teacher, he actually found out about somebody else who he worked with whose partner had had HG before, and put me in touch with her, which was useful. And she suggested joining a support group as such. And so I kind of did a bit of a search and found this Australian-based HG support group on Facebook and joined that, and it's been really helpful. So that's where I found out about the group.
When you say that you were diagnosed with hyperemesis gravidarum, which is you calling HG, what was going on to get diagnosed? And I'm almost saying it, sure, in inverted commas, because I don't think you needed a medical degree.
Yeah, absolutely. So I first started getting really severe nausea and vomiting at around 4 weeks pregnant, and kind of just assumed that it was your standard morning sickness. I went to my GP and got prescribed, you know, things like ginger and a few vitamins to try and cope with it. And it just got significantly worse day by day, to the point where I couldn't move from the bed. I was severely dehydrated. I had no energy. I was getting really dizzy, blurred vision, things like that. So eventually called the hospital, and they asked me to present to the emergency department. And whilst I was there, they kind of assessed my level of dehydration and saw how much I was constantly vomiting. And they were able to give me a diagnosis of hyperemesis gravidarum based on those symptoms. So there are a few different, obviously nausea and excessive nausea and vomiting are kind of the key symptom, but there are other things that have come alongside that, such as weight loss. So I lost around 7 kilos in about a week. And then things like ketones in your urine, excessive amounts of protein, and then not being able to keep anything down. Things like that also contribute to that diagnosis.
Elise, you're still pregnant. I'm hoping this doesn't make you feel sick.
No, I'm having a good day.
Oh, that's great.
Been having good weeks. It's good.
So what was your experience of HG?
Yeah, mine probably started around 5.5 weeks. And again, I thought standard morning sickness. I knew that my mum had suffered for 40 weeks with all three of her pregnancies. So I was kind of expecting it, but I wasn't expecting the severity and not being able to function. I was seeing a fertility specialist at the time, so I was really lucky that they were straight onto it. I just emailed and I was like, what can you do to help me? They were like, here's some scripts, come pick them up. They're at the desk waiting for you, no questions asked. So they were really supportive and just straight onto it. So I didn't have to like muck around with a doctor that didn't get it until I stopped seeing that fertility specialist.
Kiara, what about your experience?
So I've just had our fourth baby and have had hyperemesis with all four of our pregnancies. When I first fell pregnant with our first child, I had no idea that this was possible. I didn't know that it existed. And so to suddenly be so sick and incapacitated completely was a real shock for me. I was very lucky that I have really fantastic medical care. I have a great support network, but that didn't change the fact that I was completely unable to do the things that I was used to doing. I had to tell my work very early on that I was pregnant because I was so sick, because I wasn't at work. And it just impacted every part of my life. And that continued throughout that entire pregnancy and in my subsequent pregnancies as well. But it's only in this most recent pregnancy that I've just had my baby that I discovered this group on Facebook of there's 3,000 women in this group just within Australia. And I know plenty of other women who could well be in the group that aren't in the group as well. I think that this is something that isn't really understood within communities very well and therefore not necessarily dealt with appropriately. So this group of 3,000 women really support each other, really give each other suggestions on how to get through and suggestions of even how to approach medical professionals when they don't seem to understand or don't know anything about this illness, which is really unfortunate, but that's part of what we're doing here today.
Sure.
Is to try and help people understand that this isn't just morning sickness. It's very, very different to that. It's something that affects every facet of your life and your family's lives, and nobody chooses to be this way. And everybody would love to have what we call fluffy days. A fluffy day is when you're medicated fluffy, which means your medicine is working well enough that you're able to get up and out and about, or you're just able to go to work again, or you're able to care for yourself or your children. So even when you're having fluffy days or fluffy weeks, that doesn't mean you're better. That doesn't mean you're capable of doing all the things that you can normally do. In fact, it maybe means that all you can do is look after yourself a little bit. But to now be part of this group of women that supports each other in that way and people understand is really, really huge. I think the biggest thing for me with my first is that because I had never heard of it, I didn't have that kind of support then. And it was very confusing and very scary, and it really affects your mental health to be nauseous and really unwell 24/7. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night and you're nauseous, and it's really massive impact on people.
I can imagine it would be. You must have other women in the group that it would affect their decision to get pregnant again.
I think that actually happens to a lot of women. And from my own personal experience, as I said, this is my fourth child, and it was a very, very hard decision for us to consciously decide, yes, we are going to basically impact our lives for the next 9 months. We really want to have this big family that we always dreamed of having, and we're going to make a conscious decision to make that happen. But certainly there's a huge number of women that don't go ahead with future pregnancies and in fact have terminations because the impact of this is so huge.
I can't even imagine how you look after another baby while you're the other children while you're feeling so badly, or you're so, it's not even you feel bad, you're actually debilitated.
Absolutely. And I think that's where our communities really matter. I've got a very, very hands-on, helpful husband who has just done absolutely everything for the past 9 months, and my parents and his parents also. But that doesn't exist for everybody. And so that's why, you know, wider communities are so important, and getting a better understanding out there of what this actually is and what it means for people to, you know, to the extent that people can't get out of bed or they're stuck in hospital sometimes for months being fed through a tube because they can't tolerate anything at all. But yes, it's very difficult to continue on with your normal life. And some of the common things that our group of women experience is not being able to work, is having to claim income insurance if they're able to, not being able to care for their children or take their children to school. So there's lots of different ways that this impacts people.
With a group of 3,000, I would assume that potentially this is a lot more widespread than most people know.
I personally believe so. I think that a lot of people feel like they're not believed when they say, oh, I get woken up at 3 a.m. nauseous, or I vomited 25 times today, and people go, oh, no, you didn't. Come on, that's ridiculous. But no, that really happens. So a lot of people, once you get to the point where you don't feel believed, you stop saying, you stop talking about it. And I certainly had the experience with my first pregnancy where people, medical professionals, midwives at the hospital and things would say to me, well, why are you still taking these drugs? You know, you're 30 weeks, you shouldn't be taking Zofran and Maxilon and these things anymore. And so I'd get really upset about it, and I'd think, oh, maybe they're right. Maybe it's all in my head. So I'd stop taking the drugs, and the next day I'd end up in hospital. And so I think there's a lot of people that don't talk about it.
You guys must worry as well about the drugs, taking anything while you're pregnant. Are you assured that they're all safe to take?
I did quite a lot of research into this when I was first prescribed the drugs that I'm taking during this pregnancy. I'm taking quite a few, and it is initially concerning, and particularly when you get comments like Chiara mentioned from other people, even from just lay people, let alone actual medical professionals, and there's quite a lot of judgment often around the drugs that we need to take to be able to function each day and to keep our babies safe as well. And I think one of the things to flag is that without taking these drugs, if you are that severely ill and debilitated, you can't ingest any nutrients. You can't get the things that your baby requires to grow. And so it's really quite dangerous for women with severe hyperemesis to not take these drugs, even from their baby's perspective, let alone from their own health. Having said that, when I was prescribed these drugs, I did a lot of research into the studies and things that are out there. The studies compare anecdotal evidence, basically, and links between women who have taken certain drugs. They can't test the drugs during pregnancy for ethical reasons, which is the same with pretty much any drugs during pregnancy. But after the research that I did, I was confident that taking drugs such as ondansetron, doxylamine, pyridoxine, etc., were safe for my baby and for myself and were the best things for us. And I'm really lucky that I've had really great public medical care as well. My obstetricians were excellent in pointing me to where I could find that information, but also in reassuring me themselves that they wouldn't prescribe these drugs if they weren't safe or if they had any negative impact on my baby as well.
We sort of can't put too fine a point on it. It really can be a matter of life and death, and without those modern medical interventions, I think it was Charlotte Bronte died of hyperemesis. She was pregnant with her first baby, and of course in those days there was no way of coming back from that dangerous dehydration.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think that it's still something that happens, particularly in third world countries as well, and where very lucky that we live in a country where we can get things like fluids readily in hospital, and we can get feeding tubes if we need them, and we can get prescribed these drugs that help us to still continue on with, not necessarily with our daily lives, but still continue to nourish ourselves and our babies, at least to some small extent. Yeah. But without those medical interventions, it would be a much more serious condition.
For women who are experiencing really early onset, did it happen straight away or did it happen at a certain point in the pregnancy?
This is my first pregnancy, and I first started experiencing severe nausea and vomiting multiple times a day from around 4 to 4.5 weeks. And it got to the point where it was so severe that I was admitted to hospital at around 6 weeks. And it has been continuous since then. I've had a few weeks that have been certainly more fluffy, as we put it earlier, still with all of the medication, but it was very early onset and it's lasted. I'm currently 32 weeks and it's still going.
Wow. Okay. And what about the rest of you?
Yeah, for me, it started about 5.5, 6 weeks, but it's my fourth pregnancy and I hadn't felt sick in the other ones. So in the early stages, I thought like, oh, this is a good sign. Like, it means that the baby's okay. And dumb. From then I don't know how to explain it. It just sort of hit and then it got worse and worse and worse.
It counts every day.
Yeah. It's not like a gradual, like, oh, I feel a little bit sick. It's like, I don't feel good. And then it's really, really from there, yeah, escalates and
on for young and old. I guess there's a range of responses from people that haven't experienced it. Mostly your partners have been fairly understanding.
My partner has been incredible. I mean, he had never heard of hyperemesis gravidarum either, so it was a really massive shock to both of us. But my husband has picked up pretty much all of the slack in running our household, where we don't have children, so I guess we're fortunate in the fact that we haven't had any dependents to look after. But in terms of even looking after our pets and doing all of the cooking and the cleaning for our household and caring for me, of course, multiple hospital visits, still working full time, and he works about 45 minutes away from where we live. So all of that has had a huge impact on him as well as on me. But I think that one thing that gets overlooked really regularly is the impact that it has on the people around you, and particularly those people closest to you as well. So even when people are really caring and sympathetic towards us as the women who are experiencing hyperemesis, I feel like sometimes our husbands and partners get overlooked in the kind of struggles that they're going through day to day as well, because it has been really tough on both of us and on our marriage. And I just feel really, really lucky that I have such a supportive person in my life who is able to care for me and to be willing to do all of those things.
Oh, for sure. Of course, the other people that are impacted by this are your employers as well. And I guess there might be a range of responses to a woman who's very sick during pregnancy.
I'm really lucky that I have a really supportive workplace, and they allowed me to be flexible. They allowed me to drop down to casual, come in when I needed to, because I'd use up all my leave. So I'm really lucky in that regard. But just going back to your previous question, I'm also very lucky that I have a supportive family, and my husband has been really busy with work the past few months. So we moved in with my parents because I couldn't function. My mum obviously took care of me, did the washing, cooking, cleaning and everything. But my husband was a trigger for me for a little while there. And the poor thing, he'd come home, and any time I would see him for the first time that day, or he would call and I'd hear his voice, I'd be vomiting. And my dad just thought it was hysterical. He was like, look what you're doing to my daughter.
Oh my goodness.
And he felt so bad, but there was nothing that either of us could do. But yeah, so he kind of copped it in that regard. Obviously still very supportive, but I just couldn't imagine what it'd feel like to come home and your wife sees you and instantly vomits.
On the point of triggers, it's just another thing that I'd like to say there is that, you know, these things don't necessarily go away. And I'm not talking about your husband going away. I'm talking about the triggers that sometimes for people who have been through hyperemesis, sometimes these triggers last for years after your pregnancy is over and you've got your baby in your arms. For most of us, it stops immediately as soon as you've had your baby. And that's really wonderful, and we're very lucky. But there are women out there who that doesn't happen for, and sometimes it can take months and sometimes it can take years for those triggers to go away. Even though that hasn't happened to me, there are certain foods that I know there's no way I'm ever going to eat that again. I'm never going to go near that again.
Okay. So perhaps I'll get you to take a step back. The thing's called triggers. I just thought it was a general nausea that just goes on and on and on. But there are things that really set you off.
Yeah, so you can be nauseous all day, but if someone said to me, like, would you like a vegetable? Or if I thought of zucchini, I'd be like, you are the worst person on this earth right now.
Pass the rubbish bin.
Yeah, so like you might be holding on to that vomit and then someone will say vegetable and then you have no control. Like that's your trigger.
Okay. Some people can't face things like Granny Smith apples. I have heard somebody that was their thing during pregnancy, not necessarily in the extreme version that you're talking about, but they said it ended once the baby and the placenta were out.
Yeah, and I guess for most people that's definitely the case even with hyperemesis. But there are people who unfortunately that doesn't happen for and this illness continues for them and people end up with PTSD and things like that, because this is really a massive impact on every facet of your life. And so those triggers that sometimes you think, you know, maybe I'd really like to try Vegemite again, but that's never going to happen. They do stick around. It's a bit hard to deal with that, and particularly, I mean, nobody would understand that unless they've been through it.
Hopefully it turns out to be something that you can avoid in the future, a.k.a. not your husband.
I'm past that now, which is good.
Thank goodness. And so is there anything that has been explained to you as to what causes it, or do you understand that there's a thing that causes hyperemesis?
So from what I've looked into so far, the most I can sort of gather is they think it's a genetic response to two proteins in the placenta, but there is still so much more research that needs to be done.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate in the medical world about what type of things this can be related to, but I agree that's what I've kind of unearthed as well, is that it's a genetic link to do with the placenta, and because it's a genetic link, it can be hereditary as well, which is why often people who have sisters, mothers, grandmothers, etc., who've experienced this can be at a higher risk of getting hyperemesis themselves.
The other thing that's interesting there is that it doesn't necessarily happen every pregnancy. So for a woman who has three children, they might have hyperemesis all three of those pregnancies, or they might only get it once. And the other times they might get some morning sickness or no morning sickness. So it's really a bit of roll the dice as well.
Was it helpful at all to have Kate Middleton having hyperemesis?
I think it has been helpful overall, just in terms of at least some people having heard of the disease and having heard of, I guess, the severity of it. So I guess, whilst of course we don't know Kate Middleton personally, having somebody who is so prominent in the media who's gone through this has kind of given credibility to hyperemesis gravidarum as a real thing, particularly for people who are maybe not medical professionals. And so even if they're not sure of what the condition is or the severity of what's involved, I have definitely found that more people are beginning to at least be conscious that it's a thing and have heard of it vaguely due to Kate Middleton or other people who are sharing their stories more broadly on social media now as opposed to, you know, maybe 50 years ago.
So that's a good thing.
I think so. Just in terms of getting the awareness of this condition out there, I think that's been good. Yes.
Okay. So you've spoken about the things that help being understanding doctors that can prescribe the drugs that will help you. Support groups are really helpful. Anything else?
I'd like to come back, if it's okay, just to the workplace environment briefly. I've been incredibly lucky that my workplace have been very, very supportive of me and very understanding. And also have heard of hyperemesis gravidarum due to Kate Middleton. But my workplace have been wonderful in terms of letting me work from home even. So I'm still able to be employed and to, you know, gain an income to quite a large extent, even while suffering with this disease.
Yeah.
And even when I'm not having fluffy days, I can still contribute to my work in a fairly meaningful way. But that is really not the case for a very large number of people in our support group and other people that I've spoken to, particularly if you're not in a position where you can work from home and it's a real struggle to get out of bed and to go anywhere in the morning. That can be a real blow. And there are also quite a number of people who have lost their jobs or had to resign from their jobs due to hyperemesis as well. And so the impact that has on your financial capacity, you know, as a family, is huge. And combine that with the fact that many of our medications are not on the PBS and are very expensive, hyperemesis can be a huge financial burden to families and to couples. And I think that's something that's really important to flag as well, that some people end up really struggling financially because of this disease. And that's also really tricky when you're preparing for a new baby and you're trying to set yourself up as best as possible.
Absolutely. Kiara and Elisa, what is the most helpful thing?
I think the support group has been so important in terms of mental health and getting that reassurance of I'm not getting the right professional medical advice that I need, or my doctor's told me, oh, but you're this many weeks, you shouldn't have morning sickness anymore. And then going onto that support group and finding out actually there are better doctors in your area, or find someone else, just getting that reassurance that there is help out there, even if you're not getting it currently.
From what I can gather, there's an awful lot of pressure put back on you as just not coping very well.
Yeah. And I think the support group helps as well in terms of things like going to the chemist. Kiara had a chemist who was trying to refuse her medication that the doctor had prescribed, just because there's that lack of knowledge in the industry. Sharing these stories on the support group makes you feel like, okay, I am doing the right thing, but I'm not making this up.
I have to agree. I think one of the most important things, no matter what you're going through, is to feel supported by your community or by any community. And that's part of what this Facebook group gives to us, because there are days where most people who have experienced this have thought, what am I doing? Why am I still going through with this? Can I still go through with this? Can I make it through another 6 months of this? And how am I going to do that? And so every day there's somebody posting saying, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this.
And then there's, you know, 20 people who comment and say, just get to the end of the day, just get through the hour, you can do this, it's going to be all right. Have you tried this? Have you tried that? Where are you? Where do you live? Let's get some people in this group nearby who can come and give you a hand. And then there's these women who post and say, look, it's been 12 months since I had my baby. I'm feeling great now. I'm in this particular area of the country. Is there anybody else I can come and give a hand to? Do you need me to take your kids to school? I can bring you some meals or do your shopping for you. And that kind of support is invaluable. You can't ever put a value or a measure on somebody talking you out of having a termination if that's what you're feeling, because you can't see in any other way through. And so support for, perhaps, you know, as you said, if people think you're not coping, well, you know what, maybe you're not. And that's actually okay, because if you felt like you had the worst food poisoning you've ever had in your life, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, of course you're not going to cope with that. And that's okay. It's okay to not cope with it, as long as people are there to support you and help you get through.
Most of us, if you ever remember back to being sick in any way, you probably don't realise how revolting and bad and low you feel until you're actually finished at the other end.
Yeah. And I guess that's one thing about Kate Middleton's story that we all thought was pretty cool, really, is that, you know, there were these photos of her coming out of the hospital looking glamorous with a big smile on her face and with this newborn baby. And then so many people said, oh, look, you know, that's just because she's got a makeup artist and anyone would be looking great if they had all that help. But really, everybody in that group just turned around and said, oh, she's not vomiting anymore. No wonder she's smiling. She probably feels like $1 million.
Kiara, you've had your babies after the hyperemesis. Is it an instant? Bring the meal round,
absolutely,
please.
Absolutely. I've been really very lucky. It has been instant. I've had the anti-nausea medication during labour. And then as soon as my baby's born, it's like flick a switch. Everything is amazing again. And I've got to say, like with the majority of my story, is that that makes the sleepless nights and all of those things when you have a newborn baby actually seem much easier.
Can I just pull you up on something here? I think having to take anti-nausea drugs during labour is so tragic. You poor thing.
But that was the last one, so it's all good.
I think from that we can sort of conclude that you're quite stoic. You're not a malingering person.
Generally I've got a really high pain threshold. I have a very high tolerance for being unwell. But the fact that this is relentless, it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop when you're asleep. It doesn't stop at any particular time of day or any day of the week. That's what has such a big impact on us.
Is there more that needs to be done in the employment area? And you mentioned things like getting income insurance, and I imagine there's a bit of a battle with insurance companies to collect that money.
I haven't had to go through that, but certainly from what's been posted on the group, it's clear that some people are successful in claiming income insurance and some people are not successful. So obviously financial impact on people is really big. And the effect on people's employment is really big, and it depends on where you work and how that company is placed to be able to help you and support you. Obviously for smaller companies, for people who work for smaller organizations, it doesn't work very well. It's harder to be replaced at last minute and things like that. I'm not sure really what the answer could be in terms of supporting people more in a workplace, except that the more people are aware of it and really understand that this isn't a choice. This isn't somebody just not coping with vomiting, you know, once a day and then feeling better, or just having a bit of morning sickness. This is something very different to that. And more awareness, I think, in a workplace as well as across the wider community will be all that can help that.
There's often women posting in the group as well that they've had to quit their job and then they're trying to look at Centrelink options and there's nothing really available there either. It's very hard for women to get that financial support if they have had to quit their job for that reason. So yeah, I feel very sorry for those women and their families that are struggling.
A couple of days ago, I posted in the group and said, what's the one thing you wish everybody understood or knew about hyperemesis? And there were a lot of comments, and most of them really are about just people understanding this isn't a choice, that this isn't normal morning sickness, that even if you look like you're okay, if you're having a fluffy day, that you still probably feel really terrible all the time, and that it impacts everybody around you as well. Those were generally the comments that people wanted out there. I think that, you know, as a group, having all these people that understand is really wonderful, but having your local community, people who are face-to-face with you, understand is really big as well.
For those of us that haven't experienced it, what's something helpful that we could say? Because I'm sure there's a few unhelpful things that have been said.
So something helpful you can say would be, can I bring your family dinner? Or what can I do to help you?
I'm so sorry you're feeling like this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to offer you ginger or crackers.
Yeah, I'm not going to offer you ginger.
What are some of the terrible things that people have said?
Ginger.
Ginger. We call it being gingered. Someone says, have you tried ginger? Have you tried small meals? Have you tried getting out in the fresh air?
Well, I would. Sips of water.
Yeah, but I can't drink water, actually. It makes me vomit. So, there's always that. And there's always, oh, yeah, I had morning sickness too, you know. I remember I vomited every day for 12 weeks. And you're thinking, oh, you poor thing. Mm. It's not all doom and gloom, you know. For the most part, we do all still end up with beautiful, healthy babies. And that's what we're doing here, you know. We're not sick. Most of us aren't sick for the rest of our lives, which is really wonderful. And we get what we wanted out of it, which is to have our families.
Kimberly Clayton, Elise Gedigich and Kiara McNabb, all members of the HG support group on Facebook. And if you look for our Baby Talk website online or Baby Talk with Penny on Facebook, I'll try and put a link to the group they were referring to, Supporting Women with Hyperemesis. And if this is part of your story, you can request to join. If you'd like to hear this interview again or share it with somebody you think needs to hear more about support for HG, you can find this story as a podcast on the ABC Listen app or on the Baby Talk website or on any of the other places you go to get your podcasts, like iTunes. Just put Baby Talk, one word, in your search engine and you'll be able to track us down. I'm Penny Johnston. I'll see you next time on Baby Talk.
ABC Baby Talk is a weekly podcast on ABC Digital Radio, wherever you get your podcasts and on the ABC Listen app. Like us on Facebook to find out as soon as a new episode is ready. Just search for ABC Baby Talk.